This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I really think that that was the vibe that we all got, was those players appreciated so much showing off our product to so many people that tuned in to see that rivalry game, which was, I don't know, it's got to be a classic game. Oh. Top five, for sure, in USA Hockey history. Mm-hmm. That's a top five moment. You got the 80 Olympic team, you got the 96 win, you maybe got the women's win in 98. USA Hockey's had some big events, but that one on Saturday night. And Thursday's is set up to be another one, not just for USA Hockey, but for the hockey world. And it's a preview of the Olympics. I'm getting all sweaty here.
Buddy, you are fired up.
That's great stuff. Tony Granato joins us now. He, of course, does a great job with the Blackhawks, CHSN, and you heard him there on Turner, talking NHL, talking U.S. national team, and the wonderful meeting this Thursday. Gosh, it should be a gas. Joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Arturo, your all-weather tire at Turo.com. Tony, good morning. How are you?
Hey, guys, good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you very much. You know what? I took so much crap for that because the Canadian people are like, it's not even a championship game you're bragging about on Saturday night. But it didn't matter if it was an exhibition game or a preliminary round game or a street hockey game. That game was one of the most enjoyable 60 minutes of hockey that I've ever watched.
And it felt big.
It did. And anyone that tuned into it, you know, you're like, oh, okay, how are these guys going to be tonight? It's a non-meaningful game, so to speak, from the standpoint. It's not really the championship game, and it's, you know, guys playing in the middle of a season. Well, it didn't take long to show the intensity and the competitiveness and how much they cared about performing well and representing their countries and their teams. So it was pretty cool.
Yeah, we were talking about it. This, you know, especially perhaps because the NBA All-Star game was such a dud, and then you're looking at this and the way these guys are going at it, and, you know, three fights the minute the thing opens up, and it just feels completely different, and you can't help but wonder what are coaches in the NHL thinking as they watch it? I'm sure everyone's glued to it, but when you've been through it. You've been through it both coaching the U.S. and coaching NHL. What would you be thinking when you're watching your guys laying it on the line like that? It must scare you worrying about the rest of the year.
No, not a bit. What it does is it shows the pride and how proud you are of those players and of your sport to be able to understand how important it is. And when you get a center stage like that, we don't get center stage from hockey as much as I think we deserve. And that's, again, it's probably a selfish thing from my standpoint, thinking that, you know, our sport is better than others for whatever reasons. I think that you know, when you get an opportunity like that, you know, like you said, the NBA's an All-Star weekend, football's over, baseball's not really going yet. You know, what's going on in the sports world? Well, there's this hockey game, you know, Canada and the U.S. are playing. And to have that much focus on understanding that when guys get to play for their country and guys get to come together to try to show and prove and show our game off and compete, they're going to compete. And, you know, so I think from a coaches and manager, I know owners probably get nervous. Oh, my gosh, what happens if our guy breaks his hand? What happens if our guy, you know, there's been five injuries already in this tournament that are to elite players for their own teams. I don't think they mind, and I don't think the league minds. I think they went into this understanding that that's part of the risk, but the reward of people being able to appreciate your game, set up the Olympics for next year. I think that that's what this really does, too. Has been so far sensational. And now you got the same two teams going again tomorrow night. So, you know, can Canada rebound? Of course they can. I mean, they're elite. Can the U.S. be able to, you know, duplicate what they did Saturday? Of course they can. So something's got to give. And to be able to lead into this game with what just happened, again, gives us a special opportunity to show, you know, what the special parts of hockey are. In kind of a unique way.
And obviously you're speaking from experience, Tony. People know of your past as a NHL player and certainly as a coach, but let's go back to your amateur days, because did you not delay becoming a pro so you could represent Team USA at the 88 Olympics? So that was special enough to you to delay your professional debut, which I think is remarkable confidence, but also speaks to what you're talking about how different these experiences are.
Well, twofold. One, it lined up perfectly for me after my fourth year at University of Wisconsin. It was the Olympic year. So timing-wise, for me, it was perfect. It was a decision. You know, I watched the 80 team. I was 15 years old in Downers Grove, Illinois, watching on my TV with all my family as Mike Ruzzioni and Jim Craig and Mark Johnson, all of them, won that gold medal. So I got it. That's the first taste I had of what international hockey was all about. And then 4 years later, Eddie Olczyk and Chris Chelios, you know, represented the United States in Sarajevo. And then I went to school after that. So in between those years, between 84 and 88, that was at college. And I did have a chance to sign pro, but was I ready to play in the NHL? I wasn't so sure, and I knew a year of experience playing 60 games internationally with other NHL draft picks, Brian Leetch, Mike Richter. We had a ton of guys that turned out to have great NHL careers on that Olympic team. I think having one more year to prepare to get ready for the NHL was important. But the opportunity, and one time, you know, the first time you put your jersey on of your country, and the first time I put on my USA jersey after, it was only a couple years after the 80 team won at a World Junior Tournament. It's different than putting on an NHL jersey or a college jersey or your high school jersey. There is something that just runs through your body that's hard to explain. And I was fortunate enough to play on different national teams and as you said, Olympic teams. And that never changed from the first time I put that jersey on. You put that on, and the intensity and the pride that you have on knowing you're going to be able to go out and perform and compete and represent your country, it's until you're able to experience that, you don't know what that means. So all of these players that have gathered together over break, so to speak, in the NHL season, that are getting a chance to do it again, because most all of them have done it for the U.S. team, with the exception, the only one that hasn't is Jake Guentzel. This is the first time he's been part of a USA team, which is amazing because he's an NHL superstar, but he was always just outside the box, so to speak, as far as making a roster. They feel that same thing. That's why you saw what you saw on all three of the games, but especially in the game against Canada.
Yeah, it's so much fun to think about, you know, what's on the line in a game like this. And, you know, we talk about a guy like Connor McDavid. We talk about, you know, Sid the Kid still playing for Canada. Could one of those guys, you know, is this the sort of thing where one of those guys steps up and proves how great they are? Is this the sort of thing where, you know, please, if the Tkachuks are healthy, where they together could influence the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is one of these big moment things, right?
No doubt. And, you know, if Canada wins tomorrow, will the U.S. victory be forgotten? I don't think so. But the tournament will be remembered and the events of what led up to this championship game to give either Sid or McDavid, if those are the guys that step up and have the big performance tomorrow or score the big goal, you know, everybody's going to remember that. But there's so many things that come out of this tournament from a fan's perspective, from a new fan's perspective. How many Kachuk jerseys do you think were ordered after Saturday night's game?
You're right.
People learned to spell the name. Yeah.
And the other thing, too, is this is something, when you go to an NHL game and you're watching the guy skate around the rink, you know, you're saying, okay, there's Chicago Blackhawks, there's the Minnesota Wild. You don't look at him as, oh, that guy's American. Oh, that one's American, too. Oh, he's American, too. So you're seeing Brock Faber. You're seeing, like, Jake Gensel, Jack Hughes, Dylan Larkin. All these guys now are going to be more recognizable as American players. And, you know, for me, again, as an old U.S. player, that's cool because a lot of fans go to games and they just say, oh, they're the Blackhawks. They're probably from Canada. You know, no, he's actually American. He grew up, you know, in Illinois, or he grew up in Michigan or Wisconsin. And I think that recognition of understanding that's important, too, because a lot of times I don't want to say USA Hockey's underappreciated, but they've come a long, long way on some of the decisions that they have made. And I think that's a real positive thing on how these Americans have kind of showed off where American hockey is today.
Beyond just how invested you are in the game, Tony, I think that don't you also have a couple connections? You've obviously probably coached a lot of these players, but Dylan Larkin, did I hear you talk about going fishing with Dylan Larkin at one point? And I'm sure back yes. in Pittsburgh you did coach Crosby as well, correct?
I did. Yes, I did. They're both wonderful, wonderful. I can't speak highly enough of what Dylan the other night. We got a chance to talk a little bit during the show, and then he was one of my favorite to coach. But having a chance to coach Sid for 5 years, too, and see what he's all about is, you know, I'm grateful for it. Because those are the, you know, when you coach players like that, you realize – what they go through, because, you know, I was a regular player that dressed up and played hockey and had, you know, fun going out and do it. The responsibilities that they have as superstars, especially from Sid's standpoint, being the face of the game and seeing how he's represented hockey. And to this day, he's still, you know, like you said, if you looked at the game to advance them against Finland, you see the play he made at the end of the game to clinch it off. He made three or four plays during that game that solidified the chance for Canada to have the rematch against the United States. So he's still at an elite level. He's a sensational human being as well. But back to the Larkin thing. Yeah, we went fishing. He had muskie fish. So I took a muskie fishing last summer in Michigan. And we got he got a 49.5-inch muskie. So he was pretty happy with our fishing day.
Wow. Guy can do it all. How concerned are you that injuries are going to play an impact in this game? I mean, we know that that Charlie McAvoy has been hospitalized in Boston and is out, definitely out for the game. You know, hopefully, it seems like everyone else is going to play, but could that be a big impact? And what do you think about this idea that maybe Quinn Hughes will show up, but they can't use him unless they're down to their last six defense? It just feels like they should let the guy play. I mean, he was on the team; he had to back out of it for injury. I don't know sure. What about that impact? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they put the rules in place for a couple of reasons. One, like, you know, Tom Wilson from, you know, Washington, a big, big, tough, grinding winger. I'm sure Canada would say, okay, we're having a rematch against the United States. Let's get Tom Wilson out here to replace somebody else because he's a big, and he'll be able to, you know, face off against Kachuk and tell him, hey, you screw on, I'm going to beat the crap out of you. You know what I mean? So there were rules put in place to prevent, you know, substitutions as this tournament went on. From this standpoint, with all the injuries and illnesses that have gone through all the teams, I think the NHL potentially for the next tournament, because I'm sure this is going to, with the success that this tournament's had, this will be something that's on the regular schedule, and, you know, whether it be every 2 years or 4 years, they'll be playing this tournament again. I think they'll make adjustments to the roster size to prevent something like this from happening, where a team might get depleted as the tournament moves along. But I think, you know, having Quinn Hughes be there and ready because, you know, the flu is going through some teams as well. There are guys that are banged up. They got to practice day to day. There's still guys thinking that they're going to be able to play, but until the game tomorrow, there's probably some decisions that still need to be made. But the Tkachuks, knowing them, they're going to tape it up no matter what the injury is and find a way to be out there and give it their all.
Tony, you do such a great job breaking down the Blackhawk games on CHSN, and then we see you in the doing the national games for Turner as well. I couldn't help but notice you are a Blackhawk expert. You're sitting next to Paul Bissonnette the other night, and Biz has been critical of Connor Bedard, as Mark Messier was, and
yeah.
Connor Bedard has been open season on maybe being critical of the second-year star for the Blackhawks. What do you think about the way that he has been critiqued? Has it been unfair? And did you talk with Biz at all about what he had to say about Bedard?
I did a little bit, but for the most part, you know, as a superstar, you're going to get critiqued. And this was a time that that two national games that those guys saw a little bit in there that they thought was worth pointing out. Was it a shot that was unfair, or was it a shot that was probably too aggressive on their critique? I think so. I see Connor every day. I see what he's done the year and a half so far in his career. I think that Connor hearing that, look how he responded in those games. So I think actually, just like when he got cut from or didn't make the roster for the Four Nations team, what did he do? He went on a run that was unbelievable. And everybody's like, oh, man, maybe Connor should have made the Four Nations team. So I think he responded well. He handled it well. He answered the questions well. And as a superstar, you're going to get that. Sid got that when he was young. But I don't know about Gretz, if Gretz ever really had to deal with that. Until the end, Gretz had to deal with that at the end. I remember in Game 7 against Toronto to go to the finals in 1993, and Gretz played seven more years after that. 1993, the media in Toronto was going, Gretz is slowing down, and he's skating like he's got a piano on his back, and he goes out and gets the hat trick, and we advance. So young players or superstars, when they hear something, I think that's a good tool to kind of go, oh, okay, Mess made some points here. I don't think he's right, but some of these things I got to think about to maybe, you know, try to focus on to help myself. So I think Connor probably took it that way. Mm-hmm. And again, he's got to face the media every day. And he answered those questions the next day about, hey, what do you think about all these guys critiquing you? And he goes, well, I don't really pay attention to it, but hey, they're paid to do what they need to do. And they said what they needed to say. So I think all in all, it was something that I didn't particularly like. But at the end of the day, I think it's been handled really well by Connor.
Just finally, on the way out, I'm curious, is one of the great things about this tournament that there are NHL rules? You know what I mean? You're used to this style of hockey. It's not the international rules. I would like to see the Olympics change. I don't mind some guys squaring off to start a game. I thought that was super cool.
Yeah, I did too, and I'm not a big fan of the fighting. I like the fact that it's still in the game because you need to protect the skilled players, and you don't like all the silliness that would happen if there was no fighting. I think there'd be a lot of different type of play that would lead to a more ugly incidents than just the fighting. So I'm all for the fighting when it's needed. And in that game, all six of those players, three on each side, you know, made a statement that, hey, this is a game that, you know, even though, like I said, you know, when we started this, it was a preliminary round game. It didn't matter. Two teams were faced off. The rivalry, the intensity, the importance of representing your country in the right way. I thought it was a great way to start the game and show everybody how much it meant to each team, country, and individual. But as far as the rules go, after the fights happened, the referees made one call. They called that cross-checking, I think, on Miller early in the game to say, hey, you guys can play as hard as you want, but no extra stuff. And then you saw, how many big hits did you see in that game by Tkachuk, by McAvoy? I mean, it seemed like every time someone touched a puck, there was somebody in somebody's face. So the refs allowed that game to happen. Internationally, those refs would call that a lot tighter. So I agree with you 100%. That game was exciting as it was and as physical it was because the refs allowed that to happen. So it would be nice if that did carry over in international play. But let's not forget the two other teams in this really quick, because Finland and Sweden both had really good tournaments. Finland beat the Swedes. They came back and almost, you know, miraculously tied that game against Canada. Sweden, you know, lost two games in overtime and then beat the United States. So they had a good tournament. So when we do get to the Olympics, it's not just a two-team race.
Right.
To see them win a gold. There's lots of other teams. There's a few teams that aren't even in this competition.
Right.
They'll be part of the Olympics. So I think it just builds for the excitement of what the next Olympics will be next year.
Tony, thank you. Great stuff. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Tony. Terrific stuff.
You guys, too, have a great day. Always a pleasure joining you guys.
That is fantastic. That's Tony Granato. I mean, come on, man. Don't you want to watch the game right now? Let's go.
Great insight. He does a terrific job at CHSN on the Blackhawks. And then breaking it down for Turner the other night, he was very entertaining. And also, the insight's obvious.
Yeah, that was fun. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Signature Farms chicken, split breasts, drumsticks, or thighs, buy one, get one free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. Or a wheat variety bread, 24-ounce selected varieties, buy one, get one for free of equal or lesser value when you buy two. And Progresso soup, 18 to 19-ounce selected varieties, buy two, get three free of equal or lesser value when you buy five. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Everybody here probably knows what happened with Terrence Shannon, okay? We were the laughing stock, okay? Hung a banner for a young man who set all kinds of records, and we don't have to tell the story. We hung it upside down. And I can't imagine what that was like for him. A lot of people at our place did a lot of things to make it a special, special day for him. And we messed it up. And for the character of that young man to come out and do what he did today, made a shirt if you haven't seen it. When life throws you, you know, turns your world upside down.
My, Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
I love the music.
Yeah.
Brandon Fryer Thinks of Everything. Yeah. Up Down by Florida Georgia Line. Behind Brad Underwood talking about Terrence Shannon Jr. that turned a positive into a negative into a positive and turned the frown upside down.
But was it that bad? I mean, it wasn't good, but
it was bad.
Okay.
It was embarrassing.
I'm not going to argue that.
It was embarrassing.
He handled it fine. It wasn't like a life-altering moment. They just turned. They raised the jersey, which I still think that somebody must have known they were putting it up upside down because they rehearsed that stuff. They like every
you,
time
I you
I've
think
seen
it was a conspiracy.
Happen, I'm not
You're
saying,
going full Dustin.
I'm not going full Dustin. I'm just saying somebody was having a laugh.
No.
I don't believe that you could actually do that, rehearse it, and then hang the thing the wrong
way.
I don't. I just think that somebody kind of hijacked it for a laugh. I you get that going all the time with different things that go. I maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. But it reminds me of like the goofy intern that put all the fake names on the pilots with the it's just so someone would read.
I don't know what you're referring to.
I'm talking about the.
You don't remember that story?
But go ahead, finish anyway.
I don't remember the story.
There was an intern.
Whiteboard it for me.
There was an intern that put. There was a plane.
That crashed,
and he thought it was cute to like
make fun of the names of the pilots.
Oh, okay,
it was a huge story.
It was a big story.
Oh, okay.
But it was just somebody. I'm not saying it was a conspiracy, and there were 50 people involved. And I'm just saying somebody fouled up, or kind of purposely fouled up, thought it would be.
Regardless of that. Terrence Shannon Jr.
Sorry,
had
I'm sorry
the,
I brought it up.
That's okay.
Oh, no,
it went in a pretty dark direction. The T-shirt, he proceeds from the Upside Down banner shirt will benefit the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club. This is him making the best of a bad situation. And however bad is debatable, but he did definitely turn this into a good moment for Illinois basketball. Terrence Shannon Jr. is a rookie on the Timberwolves, mm-hmm. starting to get a few more minutes, starting to get into the rotation a little bit more. Hasn't played a lot as a rookie, but went back to Champaign, and it was embarrassing Saturday night at the very least. And he now is these T-shirts are hilarious, and so
yeah, it's very funny.
It's a fun thing to get involved with.
Yeah, it's very funny. But I know it's an embarrassment. It was just kind of an error, and they corrected it. That's all I'm saying. I didn't think it was as big a deal as it was made out.
Sorry, I brought it up.
No. I mean, I'm happy to talk about it. I'm just saying, I thought somebody was messing around.
I think it might be even more than messing around. I think it might be in protest, and maybe they didn't agree with the idea of recognizing Terrence Shannon Jr. And that's what might have happened
because of his legal woes when he was a
That was a big thing last year for Illini basketball. That was a thing. And I wasn't there. I wasn't in Kansas. I don't know what happened, but. He did everything he could, it seemed like. And the university did everything they could. They followed the rules. And what happened on the court is what happened on the court. He was a good player. And just in case, they didn't retire his jersey. They recognize his jersey.
Yeah, they do that a lot. They honor the number.
They honored the number.
More numbers up there than they could.
And Kofi Coburn had his also honored in the same way.
Earlier this season. And there are a couple different, I think I award the same number as D. Brown at Illinois, I believe number 11 perhaps. So they've done it before. Boy, they sure could have used Terrence Shannon last night. They lose to Michigan State, and then they lose to Wisconsin last night, lost to Michigan State on Saturday night, and then they didn't shake hands after the game. But people are, I saw a couple of references to social media. This wasn't a poor sportsmanship gesture by Illinois. This was trying to protect. After they played against each other for 2 hours and exchanged, sweat and were bodying up to one another, they decided not to shake hands to spread the flu that has kind of really spread through the Illini roster and made it more difficult. So that's why they didn't shake hands after the game and nothing else, according to Brad Underwood. And he explained it afterward, which I think should be adequate for most people.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, whatever. But That's interesting. I thought it was more just someone having a laugh, but I guess I hadn't thought about that, Dustin. There you go. No. What do you think about the college football meeting about expanding the playoffs from 12 to 14 to 16 teams?
Yeah, I don't think it really needs to be fixed necessarily. They just want to get bigger. They think it will be better. It's be hard to top this year. The one thing I wish they would tweak was the way that they seeded the teams and the byes that were awarded.
That.
And yeah. I don't think that's a big enough problem to lead to expansion. I think they've got a Notre Dame issue on their hands if they do expand and they're trying to increase the at-large bids, whatever the case may be. Notre Dame reminded people this year why it's a good idea to keep them in the mix. They're not only good for the sport, but it's good for the ratings, which is good for the sport. And they've got to be part of the conversation. I don't know that they were a big part of the explanation that I read, but they've got to be there.
The conversation was between the Big Ten and
yes.
the SEC.
Yes.
They're trying to get ahead of this because the college football playoff committee is supposedly meeting on the 25th, I believe. So they got together and they have talked about, and again, those are the two conferences, right? I think this has a lot to do with the SEC feeling that they got, they should have had an extra team. And so they're talking about expansion and the Big Ten's going along with it. And they feel like they're also apparently scheduling some games against each other. And they feel like they can tell college football, hey, we're going to do this now. Here's what we decided. And I will be very curious to see if there's any pushback at all against that idea, because they do have all the power and they have a ton of leverage. And you get this sense that they could be removing themselves if things don't go the way they say they should go.
Yeah, I think it's all about a bigger revenue stream. I just don't think it's necessary. I liked 12 teams. I like the way it's working now. Tweak it, save it, preserve it. I don't know if you necessarily need to expand it. I just don't know.
Well, I mean, they're not just talking about expand. I mean, they're talking about going from 12 to a minimum 14 to 6. That's a lot. 16
yeah,
teams
know.
Would be a lot.
Yeah, it'd be
and you'd be
expansion.
Facing off against NFL playoffs right mm-hmm. at that point, right?
Not a great idea.
Yeah.
Not a great idea.
Again, it'll be interesting to see if there's...
Bigger isn't always better.
Wasn't it that they said they wanted four guarantees from each? So eight of the next... Eight of the pool
yes.
would be...
That's the point. That's the Notre Dame conundrum.
Would be SEC that, and
every time you guarantee an at-large bid to one of these two major conferences, you're making it less likely that a team outside of that pool makes the tournament, which is not a fair tournament. That's a rigged tournament. That's a special interest being served tournament. And
I say just get rid of all the byes and add four teams in. Just no more byes.
Or just look at it objectively and don't when you have the 12 teams, seed them.
That you got to seed them, but
and then give award.
What he's saying is interesting because there's not enough evidence yet, but the bye didn't help anybody.
Hurt, right?
Right.
Potentially hurt everybody.
The bye doesn't really help theoretically because in theory it does because
yes.
of health and rest and all the things. Realistically, when you're a team on a roll, you'd rather play, and the team that has to sit is not the same team because it takes a quarter and a half to start to regain whatever rhythm or tempo or continuity that they had before that. So. The bye wasn't a good thing for teams this year.
Right. I mean, ASU is the perfect example. They were like the hottest team.
They're hot.
They were hot. They sat, and then it took a whole half for them to figure out, and they had their best player with the case of the flu, possibly. But here's the problem with the ranking them.
Yeah.
What happens then to the conference championship game? We get into the conversation we had where teams would actually not be playing guys.
You would rather lose it than win it.
Win it, yeah. right?
You're
I mean,
right.
so,
You're
I mean,
right.
then it. Then what do you do with that?
I think the other element here, and we used to talk about this all the time, that when you had a break between the end of the college football season and the beginning of the bowl season, teams were different. teams were completely different. They had matured differently. There were players that started the season. These guys are college kids getting bigger, stronger, better. As some teams got different as that break took place.
Sometimes, what, 6 weeks?
Well, yes.
What's the goal? What's the goal of the term? Is it to make the most money, then you expand it and you limit it to you make it so the Big Ten and SEC have easier access. If your goal is to find the champion out of the 12 best teams or 14 best teams or 16 best teams, then you'll do just that. You'll make it you won't have as many automatic berths based on your third place finish in the SEC. But I don't think anyone can agree on what the purpose of this playoff is.
Well, I think it goes back to what you've always talked about, how there's two college footballs. There's the, you know, the big time programs, and then there's the school. I would like to see it remain connected, right? I would like to see a team that has a great year be able to play in the college football tournament so that you determine if they're a great team or
not. It makes you wonder, you know, with Boise State and SMU and even Arizona State to a lesser degree, but you wonder about their viability. Did you really ever think they were going to have a chance to win it all? Probably not. Does that mean they should be deprived the chance to prove that? I don't know. That's a good argument. It's a different kind of debate and conversation. But I think I like that idea more than I like the idea of the fourth best SEC team getting an automatic berth.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Because I do like to see the crossover. I like to see how a guy from a Boise State, Ashton Gentry, would play against a team like Penn State in that defense or something like that. That to me is more appealing and really more equitable and fair than just saying, well, you know what? Sorry, SEC fourth place team. Sorry, Mississippi State. You know,
it is fascinating that there is this pushback, though. And I suppose we expected it, but that's exactly right.
It's
you just made
money.
The dollar
yeah,
sign. That's exactly right. That's exactly
correct. It's all because of that. And, and unfortunately, that's a reality. And we're getting texters, 269. ND, Notre Dame is rigging its regular season to make the playoffs. These schedules are years in advance made.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
There's no way they're doing that. Maybe they're doing it moving forward. But, heck, by the time they do that, everything will be changed once again.
Yeah.
Notre Dame has earned the right to be in the discussion for what they meet. They need to meet a criteria. They don't have a conference championship game. That's true. So you have to make it, but you don't want to penalize them or punish them for being independent.
It's a real interesting argument. I'll be very curious to see what happens when they take it all under advisement.
Because,
again, I don't know that
working.
They can. It's working. But it's not working for the SEC.
They need
at least
to tweak
it. Last
Get
year.
Better.
Yeah, I agree.
Better. All right, right now be the sixth caller to the Scores Contest line, 312-540-0670, and you can win a pair of tickets to see Dierks Bentley with Zach Top and the band Lula on June 14th. It's a Saturday at Credit Union One Amphitheater. Tickets go on sale tomorrow or Friday at 10 a.m. Tickets on sale Friday at 10, 312-540-0670. Be the sixth caller and win a pair of tickets to see Dierks Bentley.
All right, we're going to bring in, I believe it's a Layla Wednesday. We'll bring in Layla and Marshall and Dan. We'll have a chat with them. Can't wait to find out what Dan decides to cherry pick today. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.